Morning, Dick.
Hey, guys.
Now, plenty going on in the world of college football, and your Washington Huskies, not my favorite team, I might add, but your team.
Jeez.
They're in the Final Four.
Why is it not your favorite team? What do you have against my Huskies?
Nothing, really. I just don't know a lot about them. I think it's probably the fair...
I cheer for the Huskies.
Do you?
Yeah, because they're Dick's team.
They're Dick's team. Well, if you go from Dick, I'm on board.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we got to, you know, the Huskies, when I was growing up, the Huskies were one of the elite teams in college football, really for about 20 years, from the moment I was born all the way until I was graduated and went through college there. And then they went through about 20 years of hard times, guys, and they were at the best a mediocre team for the next 20 years after that. But they got a new coach about 3 years ago. He had success elsewhere. He has come in here and really, really develop an elite program, and they've got an uphill battle. There's no question about that. They've got the number one team in the country in Alabama, but the good news is they're 18, 19, 20, and 21-year-olds, so Alabama is going to hear for the next month that they are the favorites. They're going to win it, and the Huskies are just fodder for them, which is great because we love playing the underdog role. There's nothing bad about that when you hear 18 to 21-year-olds thinking for a month that they're just going to wipe the floor with Washington.
And, mate, talking about things going well in your part of the world, your Seattle Seahawks, big winners, but I see that Pete Carroll, your coach, might even have a little bit of a scrimmage with the Washington Huskies.
Well, I think that was all in jest. I think what that was Chris Peterson, the Husky coach, saying that at least we have the Seahawks in town. I think what he was doing is he was pumping up his opposition in Alabama, who many have called one of the best college football teams in the last 10 years, and they can be a pro team. So he says, well, at least we have the Seahawks in town, so maybe we can scrimmage against them. But
I think
that was just said in jest as kind of a tip of the hat to how good a team Alabama is that they're going to face.
Mm. Yeah, now you got some big games in the NFL.
Yeah, you know, the NFL is right now we're starting. It's kind of almost like moving day in golf now. We're starting to see the cream of the crop team separate themselves from the rest of the pack. But there's still plenty of playoff spots that are up for grabs. I mean, you take a look at the teams that have really essentially clinched a playoff spot. There aren't very many of them. There's only five or six teams that can say confidently that they're going to be in the playoffs. We've got 12 playoff teams to fill, with still about 23, 24 teams total fighting for those 12 spots. But a couple of big games this weekend. I mean, Dallas and the Giants is going to be a huge game in the NFC. And then you got a monster game, which I think will probably determine the AFC West Championship. And it's a Thursday night game with Kansas City hosting Oakland. Oakland is kind of living on borrowed time right now. They seem to be getting win after win after win in the late stages of games, barely outscoring their opponents. You know, not that Kansas City's a juggernaut, but it's very, very difficult to win in KC. So I think Kansas City probably snaps Oakland's winning streak on Thursday night.
Mate, I saw the match in Green Bay the other night. They must have a massive home ground advantage there when playing in that icy, snow-covered field.
Yeah, they really do. It's one of the best in the NFL. And incidentally, guess who's coming to Green Bay this weekend? The Seattle Seahawks.
Ooh.
So it's going to be a tough test for my Seahawks to win in Green Bay. Seattle's the better team, but you're right. That home field advantage, just with the crowd noise, is enough in Lambeau. You add the snow to that. And I was talking on the air about the forecast. And, you know, just the bad luck for Seattle is all week long it's supposed to be clear and cold in Green Bay until game day, and then they have an 80% chance of snow. You might see the same type of weather for this Green Bay game that you saw for this last week's Green Bay game that the Packers won.
Right.
Yeah, it's always interesting watching guys play in the snow.
I
find it very, very fascinating.
So is that a season-defining game for Seattle and Green Bay?
It's more of a season-defining game for Green Bay because Green Bay is one of those teams that I mentioned that are fighting for the rest of those playoff spots. Seattle's pretty much clinched the division championship. They're going to be either the 2, the 3, or the 4. So Seattle just has to really win. If Seattle wins 2 of their last 4, they're pretty well in that number 2 spot. So it's not a must-win type game for Seattle. It is a must-win game for Green Bay. They're just 6-6 on the season. So, I mean, if you wanted to, you know, Seattle's the better team. So if you're going to wager on that game, you got to think, all right, am I going to go for the better team in Seattle, or am I going to go for the home team that's also the hungrier team in Green Bay? So right. That's kind of how you have to weigh that if you want to wager on that game.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, moving away from NFL, we watched here Tiger. We were up early. We were watching his performance at the Hero Challenge, his own tournament. We all thought it looked okay, given that he hasn't played for probably a year and a bit.
I think it looked more than okay, guys. I was mesmerized. I forgot how much I missed Tiger Woods.
I think that's
I
a fair point.
So much of that golf tournament,
yeah.
And there's no way I'd be watching a golf tournament on a football weekend in December, guys. But Tiger Woods brought me back to the television, and you know, think about this. He was tied with Hideki Matsuyama for most birdies in the field, even though he finished in 15th place. He had 24 birdies. But he also led the field in bogeys or worse, and really was the 18th hole that tripped him up. Think about this. Double, 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 and par on the 18th hole. That's six over par for the tournament on one particular hole. Yeah. The other 17, he was spectacular.
Yeah, they talked a little bit about his chipping. I know they have, and whether he had the yips. I know people have been saying that behind the scenes, but there were no signs of yips. I know it wasn't
No, he played. He didn't, but I reckon he had the yips before he left.
Oh, yeah, he was struggling. But certainly, I agree with you.
Oh, yeah, he struggled. Yeah, he struggled down the stretch on Sunday. And maybe, you know, that could be a stamina thing as well. I mean, here's a guy that hasn't played competitive golf really only off and on for a good portion of the last 7 or 8 years. So, you know, the fact with all the pressure, all the eyeballs on him, he comes out, has an emotional day on Friday where he throws up the 64, the 65. And, you know, then comes and has an okay Saturday, he might have just ran out of gas.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair comment. Mate, just quickly too, Dick, this Matthew Dellavedova got himself a massive contract, and he looks to be backing it up pretty well. I know you probably don't follow the Aussies that closely in the NBA, but he seems to be doing well. And Andrew Bogut suffered a knee injury, but that knee injury is not serious.
Yeah, and Bogut's such a huge piece of any part of the puzzle that he's in. Now, in Dallas, he's not going to be playing in the playoffs like he was in the Golden State. There's no question about that. But, you know, the story of the offseason in the NBA is we've really never seen money thrown around the way it was thrown around. And while Matthew Dellavedova is very, very overpaid, I don't think he was the most overpaid guy in the offseason. I mean, at least Matthew Dellavedova has been in the finals and has been a key member of a team that was in the finals. I mean, some of these other guys that are getting contracts, I mean, this Tyler Johnson character in Miami, I'd never even heard of the guy, and he signed a 60 or 70, $80 million contract. So at least I'd heard of Matthew Dellavedova before he got all that money. So he's playing pretty well.
Yeah, he is. Now, Dick, finally before we go, there was Steve Smith, Australian cricketer, took a catch. And I know it made its way to America because we saw some bits and pieces from American Twitter feeds where he dived left hand. I know it's a bit off the cuff. Maybe you saw it, didn't see it.
You know what? I saw the tweet, and for whatever reason, it was one of those where you go through Twitter and you're like, oh, I want to take a look at that. But then you put your phone down and you're doing something else, and I forgot to go back and watch it. But I did see it was on my Twitter timeline. I did, but I just saw a still shot, so I have not seen the video yet.
No. Just have a look at it and say,
sure.
When things make America, we get really excited over here. We've only got 20 million, you've got 300 million, so we get excited.
Well, you know, that's exactly how I feel when it comes to like my Washington Huskies, because nobody pays attention to West Coast college football.
Yeah, okay.
The college football is all in Texas and the Southeast. And so when my Washington Huskies make the Final Four and everybody has to talk about them, I'm like, hey, all right, finally somebody talking about my team.
Good on you, Dick. We're always talking about you. We enjoy our crosses. Thanks again, mate.
Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you next week.
Dick Fain from Radio KJR Seattle, always giving you a terrific rap. This is something I did want to bring up with you, and I thought, God, if I'm associated with Puma, I'd be spewing about this. They had shots last night of three broken bats. We saw the broken bat at the SCG on Sunday, and then last night they showed three broken bats on the sideline, and they were all from Puma.
Cracked through the bottom.
Now, Puma make good bats. They all make good bats these days, right?
Puma make good cricket bats.
How bad are the makers of Puma cricket bats? When does a player use three in one game? How do you think Puma are thinking today? It's a good little text that comes in because I thought exactly the same thing because they are good bats.
Most cricket bats are the same. I'm going to share a little secret here.
Different badges.
lot of career bats come from the same spot with different stickers on them.
Mm.
Okay, so some of the players, some of them are made like, I know the Gunn and Moore ones are because they come out of England.
Yep.
A lot of them come out of India now. They're all pressed really hard. They've all got the moisture sucked out of them. That's why they're big and that's why they're light. Sometimes you get a batch that isn't as good as others.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be throwing Puma under the bus.
No.
Just, I know it was throw Puma bats and I get it and I get the impression.
It just wasn't a good image.
No, it's
mate,
not a great look. I get it. But I wouldn't say it's the Puma cricket bat. I would just say it's cricket bats in general. They break all the time. The guys swing so hard these days.
Yeah, that they were all, from memory, all three of those bats were the inside edge.
Absolutely.
You know, the just might have just been a little bit of a weak spot for whatever reason. And but if I'm Puma, I wouldn't have been wrapped with that image.
I'm filthy. Have you been lately to buy a cricket bat and see how much they are?
Yes. I'm a bit of a cricket bat perv.
You walk out just a little bit lighter in the Skyrocket.
Yeah.
When you purchase a cricket
some
bat.
Some are up over 1,000.
Yeah. Some are very, very.
Any guarantee of runs with them?
No, none. Absolutely zero guarantees.
No, but they are incredibly large and incredibly light for their sizes. No doubt about that. 13, 53, 53.